Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big
party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, Connor. What's going on, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
I got your name right.
You did. I'm so surprised. I'm so proud of you.
Let's see how long.
You call me Conrad or something. Yeah.
Or comrade. I say comrade. Okay. Comrade Connor.
Oh, yeah. We're communist now.
Yeah. I want to talk about something, man, as we start the show, man, that is really still pretty amazing to me, man. You know, people who have religious beliefs, and their beliefs somehow supersede everything and everybody else, right? You know, whatever their beliefs are, everybody has a right to their beliefs. But what you don't have a right to is to force your beliefs on other people. Mm-hmm. And this has been an ongoing issue in this country for a long, long time, man. People who want to force their religious beliefs on others. And so it's fine if, you know, whoever or whatever you are, and your beliefs are, you're entitled to those. And I see my guest has just made it in the door. Is that too loud for you, Dr. Michael Rosen?
Can't hear anything right
now. You can't hear anything. Let's see. Here is,
too loud now.
Okay, what about that?
A little bit down.
What about there?
That's good.
All right, good morning to you, Dr. Michael Rosen.
A little bit more down.
A little bit more down, okay.
Good morning to you, Earl. And
what about there?
That's good.
Okay, for those who don't know, Dr. Michael Rosen is a retired MATC economics professor and a former president of MATC Faculty Union. And what else are you?
That's pretty much it. I'm a father, grandfather, longtime Milwaukeean homeowner.
Well, it's good to have you back in the studio. Bring that microphone down to you. Look, pull it towards you.
Okay. There you go. Okay.
There you go. You got that great voice. You know, Mike, Dr. Rosen, how you been?
Real good. But I want to apologize to you, Earl, and your listeners. I got caught in a lot of traffic coming out.
Oh, come on.
Today.
You don't have to be apologize. You're here, man, and it's good to have you here. I'm glad that you're going to be a part of the program. I'm really excited because you are a fighter. You're a fierce fighter, and you're a fighter for unions. You're a fighter for the average person, the downtrodden. Heck, you're just like I am.
Yeah, well, Earl, I think for both of us, it comes from our backgrounds.
Right.
I mean, our backgrounds are very different. I mean, you're African-American, and you worked at A.O. Smith, and your father worked at A.O. Smith.
Right.
And I'm sure your family's roots are in the South.
No,
I don't know the facts,
right.
But I mean, I know the general history
right.
of African-Americans in Milwaukee.
Right.
I'm quite different in the sense that my grandparents didn't come from the South. They came from Vilna in Lithuania as immigrants who were from Odessa in the Ukraine as immigrants. And they were escaping the same kind of poverty and discrimination pogroms that Jewish people faced in Eastern Europe, and they fled to the United States. My grandfather ended up working in a sweatshop in Baltimore, and I still have the clipping that my father gave me where he got arrested in a strike in 1913.
Wow.
I think that it's, and of course, in my background, a couple of my aunts are Holocaust survivors, and they lost many of their family members in World War II to the fascists, to the Nazi Party. They were exterminated at Auschwitz and in Poland, just shot a couple of my aunt's brothers. And so I think that for both of us, our history informs our outlook on the world and are the positions that we take.
You know, Dr. Rosen, there's also another connection. Your younger brother and I work together, and my older brother and you work together.
Exactly.
So, that's...
A lot of personal connections.
Yeah, really. And, man, it's so great to have you here. I want to begin. I'm talking about a young man, a teen... in Texas, who was a Christian and who got fired from his job because he said he's facing religious persecution because his job wouldn't allow him to go to church on Sunday. I don't know where people are coming from, Dr. Rosen. I really don't understand how. And then you say, well, this is happening to me because I'm a Christian. And that it becomes a big story because you know going in that this is a job. He's a teenager. And so how does it come to be a big deal because he's being fired because he doesn't work on Sunday because he said, I'm a Christian, and they're persecuting me for being a Christian because I want to go to church on Sunday. Well, he can go to church on Sunday. But he can't have it both ways, right? I mean, where are we at with all this?
I'll tell you an interesting personal story, and then I think I can put it in a broader perspective. The personal story is that when my grandfather, the one who got arrested in a strike, first came to the United States, he and his wife, he got hired by a man who owned a Jewish man who owned a business, a small factory, and my grandfather was Jewish. And my grandfather went to the owner and said, well, I can't work on the Sabbath, which for Jews is Saturday.
Right.
And the owner said, if you don't work on Saturday, you don't have a job. My grandfather didn't get headlines in the newspaper saying that there was discrimination against Jews. He simply had to make a decision. At that point, he made a decision to keep the job.
Right.
He needed it as a poor immigrant in this country. But put it in the broader perspective, there is a myth in this country that's being perpetrated that is that Christians are under assault.
Yes.
It's a total myth. If you look at if you look at any power structure analysis in this country of who runs the banks, who runs the Supreme Court, who dominates U.S. corporations, you'll see that the vast majority of people, in fact, are white, except on white male Christians. This is part of an effort. A right-wing, white supremacist effort, frankly, to promote what's called Christian nationalism, and to say that America is a Christian nation, which is historically incorrect. Many of the founding fathers weren't Christians; they were deists. But the fact of the matter is that there's a political motivation behind these kinds of activities that are trying to and are promoting an ideology that is Christian nationalism. And if you study both the roots and the history of Christian nationalism, it is explicitly white supremacist. It is explicitly anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish, and it is explicitly an ideology that I think most is anti-American, frankly.
You know, Dr. Rosen, all of those things you just channeled, all those things you just said, it's kind of at the root of what is a festering problem in this society now, that people can't seem to figure out. Well, they don't want to say it, right? I mean, there are folk on the left who do know that what you've just talked about is true. Mm-hmm. And it's at the root of all of these issues that we are dealing with right now, or majority of these issues we are dealing with right now in this country, and yet people can't say it or can't bring themselves to say it.
The fundamental principle of the country was the separation
of church and state.
People have the absolute right to worship whatever God and in whatever institution of faith that they want. But one of the principles that was established in this country, and that is central to having a democracy where all people are respected as citizens, is that there needs to be a separation. And what's really ironic about the people arguing that Christians are under attack, and remember a few years ago, Donald Trump was saying there's a war on Christmas,
right?
I, as someone who's not a Christian, but who has lived in this society where the dominant religion is Christianity, I can tell you that I've never seen Christmas, Easter, or any of the Christian religious holidays minimized. In fact, they're strongly promoted. At the same time, we try not to have them become the national religion.
You know, Dr. Rosen, you're so on point, because when you shouldn't have to argue with people. The nation supposedly, I mean, there's all these other beliefs that are in this nation, and those are the things that supposedly made the nation great, because people with all these different beliefs and freedoms are supposed to have equal footing in this society. But clearly, at this point and at this juncture, it is getting further and further away from tolerance in this nation. And people, if you are Muslim, believe in Islam, Islam, Judaism, Taoism, Buddhism, whatever your ism is, it's going to take a back seat to Christians, because Christians outnumber everybody else in the society, which should have nothing to do with what they claim that this nation was founded on. I got to go to a break. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen, 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I am really thrilled to have Dr. Michael Rosen back in the studio. He's a retired MATC economics professor and former president of MATC faculty and union. Let's talk about evangelical Christianity and the fact that I don't know how, and just from, you know, the things that I've read about Christianity, and then Dr. Rosen, you look at the way that's been turned inside out and upside down by people who claim to be Christians. Here, let me see. I have this right here. And yet you see Christians who are divided about what happened on January 6th. What is there to be divided on? You clearly saw a group of racists. That's who they were. And people who claim to be victims. You know, this is their country, and they want to take back their country. And clearly, to hear those conversations, Dr. Rosen, it always turned my stomach, because to continue to allow criminals, And that's who those people were. It doesn't matter. Who can beat people in this country talking about thugs and in the central city and other things and other people? But yet, before the world, the thugs that came into the Capitol and did the damage they did there. And yet there's still people who are willing to say, well, these were decent people who have just had enough of being pushed around in our country.
Yeah. It seems to me that a large section of the evangelical Christian movement has transformed itself into a hardcore political sect. And their goal is, as any hardcore political organization that is committed to maintaining political power, is really more based on their goal of maintaining and exercising political power than it is in regard to following the teachings
of
Christianity. I mean, just take an example. One of the tenets of Christianity is to take care of your brother.
Right.
To treat the other as you wish
yourself,
to be treated.
Right.
It is a tenet of the white Christian nationalists. They have a huge hostility to Muslim immigrants, to Latino immigrants, to Haitian immigrants.
Right.
They are anti-immigrant. That is totally contrary, at least as I understand Christianity, to the theology. What it indicates to me is that their Christianity or their self-proclaimed belief in it is that they pick and choose what they want to believe more to enhance their political power than to really implement Christian theology.
You know, Dr. Rosen, when you constantly hear about the founding fathers and what they meant in the separation of church and state, and if you believe those things, they were right when they talked about that separation of church and state. And there was a point not so long ago when the nation itself attempted to kind of follow those tenets.
Yes. See, I'm going to date myself here, but Bob Dylan wrote a song.
You and I both.
called "With God on Our Side," and I think we see this, whether it's in Iran, where you have a religious government, or in Israel today, where you have a religious government. That when you have a theocracy where the political leaders believe that they are acting in God's will, it generally ends up being very autocratic, it's anti-democratic, and contrary to really what we in this country at least claim to believe, which is that all citizens have rights, the right to free speech, the right to vote, the right to assemble, and that they all are equal before the law. But if you have a religious government, it creates a hierarchy of people in terms of where they stand. And unless you are of that religious perspective, you have less rights than other quote citizens.
And you know, Dr. Rosen, the saddest part of all of that is, men and women have been sent all over the world to die, supposedly,
right,
to maintain that, right?
Right.
To make it possible for so-called for Americans to be able to have these freedoms. And that's why we've sent people to lose their lives to protect the freedoms that they claim we have. But many of us see those freedoms having, whether they were ever there in the first place, clearly they have been eroded and continue to be eroded more and more as we move forward. And so at some point in time, this conversation that you and I are having, Dr. Rosen, doesn't happen very often over the public airwaves. And I've always said, what's the point if you have an opportunity to be before the public? We should have conversations about real issues right. that impact and affect the society. And this may make some folk angry, but Dr. Rosen, we aren't fudging it. I mean, our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Anybody who disagrees with what we are talking about, we're going to give you an opportunity, certainly, to rebut or refute what it is Dr. Rosen and I are saying. And I see you guys are up. We'll come to you on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Dr. Michael Rosen is my guest. We'll be right back.
Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids want to act like what they see in the cinema. Yeah. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, love is found. Now ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love? Where is the love?
I just want to know what you have to say about that.
Well, Gary, hang on. Hey,
I appreciate your comment. I want to make it clear I was not blasting Christianity. What I was blasting was advocates of Christian nationalism. I, in fact, said earlier, if you were listening carefully.
Gary, he was quiet. I'm sorry.
When you spoke.
You're right.
Let him go ahead.
I was talking about Christian nationalism, and I want to, in fact, what I said was my understanding of Christianity is that it is a very noble religion if people follow its actual tenets, such as taking care of your brother, turning the other cheek,
love
so
thy
forth
brothers
and so on.
But
you're right, I'm not an expert on Christianity, but I have done some study of Christian nationalism. And let me just read you some quotes from the founder of Christian nationalism, this is from, and let me, I want to quote it exactly. So Gerald L.K. Smith was a preacher, politician, and Nazi sympathizer who was the advocate of Christian nationalism. He ran against Franklin Roosevelt in 1944, on a Christian nationalist American First ticket. And these are some of the things he said. We must keep control of our own money and our own blood. In other words, we must remain true to the Declaration of Independence. That is nationalism. We believe that the spiritual symbol of our statesmanship is the cross, which is indeed the symbol of Christianity. He said, went further on to say, fight mongrelization and all attempts being made to force the intermixture of the black and white races. Preserve America as a Christian nation, being conscious of the fact that there is a highly organized campaign to substitute Jewish tradition for Christian tradition. He was a virulent racist, and the current advocates of Christian nationalism are following in his footsteps. That is not a condemnation of Christianity. There are many Christians who do not subscribe to that. So I want to make that very clear.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
I'm one of them.
I just want to make that clear. But there is a movement in this country now, including the Republican candidate for governor in Pennsylvania, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is a congresswoman from Georgia.
Boebert.
Boebert from Colorado.
Yeah, right.
And these are people who and others across the country, and I'm assuming there are some of
Matt
the
Gaetz.
Some of the Gaetz, Matt Gaetz, and so, I'm assuming some of the politicians in the state of Wisconsin as well, who ascribe to this, and it's a dangerous theory. And I'll just say that you talked about your family, my father, and all of my mother's four brothers all fought in World War II to help maintain democracy in the United States. They all came from immigrant families. And their goal was to preserve America as a land of democracy and opportunity where there was no dominant religion, but where everybody was free to practice their religion. My one uncle won the Distinguished Flying Cross for flying over 70 missions over Italy and Germany and bringing to the ground and saving the lives of the pilots. He was a bombardier. My another uncle was wounded in Okinawa. My father was involved in the invasion of Anzio. They did not risk their lives, and in the case of one uncle, get shot in Okinawa to establish a theocracy. They were fighting to establish a democracy where everyone is free to practice their religious beliefs.
Gary?
And that's the way most Christians believe, and that's the way I believe. But you use these terms of Christian nationalism. That's like a kill word. It's like stabbing a
well, hey Gary, whether or not that makes you feel bad, if the shoe doesn't fit, then don't wear it.
No,
but that does not mean that is not happening in this country. It's happening before the world.
Okay, you got the people like the Proud Boys, which are you could call them a national group. Okay, nationalism or something like that. But don't put that with Christianity, because true Christianity is we do love our neighbors. Like you said before, you love your neighbor as yourself, and you help them out.
Gary, that's more Gary. That is more. It is more to it than verbal, right? I mean, it's easy to say those things. Actions are something altogether different.
But what I see, and I appreciate your comments, is that someone like it's important that someone like yourself condemn those who are now trying to seize the label or the mantle of Christianity and promoting, quote, Christian nationalism. It doesn't sound like that's your ideology. It sounds like your theology is Christianity. But there is a rising Christian nationalist movement in this country. From what I'm hearing you say, it's warping your beliefs, but it's doing it in your name. And so it's important that people like you
push
back on that and make it clear that they don't speak for that you're an evangelical Christian and they don't speak for you.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much.
Gary, thank you very much for the call. You know, Dr. Rosen, this has been going on for some time now. The roots of it are very deep, and yet a lot of times these things are underground. Donald Trump brought it to the light,
right?
And he made it okay, and now those people who felt that way and were always in the background have been made okay, and so they don't have to anymore hide their feelings. And they've come out and said, all you have to do, Dr. Rosen, is remember what happened in Virginia. Charlottesville, Virginia. And you saw it. And the world saw it. And we know that continues on a daily basis. We've got people who are filled with hate in this society who just don't believe that all people are equal. And you can't be a person who believes in the tenets of Christianity and hate and have that kind of hatred for your fellow man, your fellow human being. It doesn't matter. Under Christ, it didn't matter what religion a person was. They were all from the same human family.
Yeah. I think one of the things that listeners should think about is that the merger or alliance between a large section of the organized Christian religion and the Republican Party is a relatively new phenomenon. For many decades, the Republican Party, in modern history, I'm talking just pre-World War II and post-World War II, was the party of big business. And it had a very difficult time winning elections, particularly at the federal level after World War II. It was only in the early 1970s that it began to flirt with Christian activists essentially the evangelical movement.
Billy Graham. And
it began to form a coalition. And that coalition of pro-business or anti-worker, if you will, and then the evangelical Christian movement, that is what helped put Ronald Reagan in power and has been critical to the success of Republican officials, you know, throughout the South, for example. Without the according of the evangelical movement, and particularly around the issue of abortion, frankly, the Republican Party would be much weaker than it is. And the irony is that until recently, there was a real cynicism in the sense that the business wing of the Republican Party would keep getting elected based on getting evangelical Christian votes and never really delivered anything to them other than rhetoric.
You know, Dr. Rosen, when we come back, I want to talk about labor. And I can't ever sit down and have a conversation with you without talking about labor. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen. You can join us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen. He's a retired MATC economics professor and former president of MATC Faculty and Union. You know, Dr. Rosen, I was talking about this on yesterday. In 20 states across the nation, the minimum wage is still $7.25. And that was raised from $5.10 back in 1992 or something, whatever it is. You and I are union men. And we do know that the importance of the unions, and the unions were destroyed intentionally. We see the outcome of what has happened since they've destroyed unions. And it was really the right, for the most part, who destroyed unions, Republicans who were opposed to it. But now you see all over the rural areas, Dr. Rosen, people who were blue when you and I were in the heyday of unions. You know where the Democrats were. The Democrats were in the rural areas. They were in the cities. They had this far reach because the rural areas knew that Democrats would fight for them, and they knew where their bread was buttered. But once once the unions were destroyed, then many of the rural areas said the Democrats let us down. Mm-hmm. And so those people then turned to Republican.
Yeah.
And Dr. Rosen, so, and then I'll let you, but what I don't understand is the very people who helped destroy the unions now have benefited because the people who live in the rural areas who have lost things, just like those of us who live in the cities, who lost our jobs with all the industries that left the cities and with NAFTA, that impacted people in the cities as well as people in the rural areas. Now the rural areas have turned red.
Right.
What is your take on all of this?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the relationship between unions and inequality. If you go back to the 1920s, which is before large-scale manufacturing was unionized, we had, it's known as the Roaring Twenties,
right,
but we had tremendous inequality in this country, the kind of inequality we haven't seen until the present day. What happened in the 30s is that through a combination of organizing and the New Deal, in particular the passage of the National Labor Relations Act, also known as the Wagner Act, which said that employers are encouraged to engage in collective bargaining, you had massive organizing of manufacturing in this country. Locally, places like Briggs & Stratton, A. O. Smith, American Motors, you name it, all became unionized. It was called industrial democracy. And during the 30s and then the 40s and early 50s, in 1954, following World War II, we had the highest rate of unionization in the history of the country. About 35% of all workers in the country were unionized. It's a period that economists call the Great Compression. It was the period of the growth of the great American blue-collar middle class, where auto workers, steel workers, rubber workers, people who worked in basic industry could negotiate a fair wage, which meant that they could buy a home for the first
right.
time, because before World War II, most people did not own their own home. They could buy a car for the first time. They could get a vacation and have health care for the first time. All of these things were a result of unionization. And as a result, as I said, economists call this period the Great Compression, because it was a period when inequality declined the middle class grew. That began to reverse itself in the early 1970s, and then beginning in the late 70s and early 80s, when with the Reagan administration going after essentially breaking the air traffic controllers union.
That was the beginning.
You worked at A. O. Smith. In 1978, A.O. Smith shut down a plant when it went on strike in Granite City.
Right.
It opened up a plant in Tennessee. In 1981,
right.
And began to
beginning
ship jobs out.
And
A.O. Smith went from, about 8,000 workers started to lose work. Now, they didn't say they were union busting, but they started moving plants to, and it wasn't just those companies, but Briggs & Stratton did
right.
the same and others. You began to see the growth of inequality. So that's clear that unions are good for ensuring or making sure that corporations share their profits with their employees. And when we workers don't have unions, they are not able to ensure that that takes place. And now we're seeing the fruits of that with a tremendous growth in inequality in this country.
Well, the paper mills, the rural
right.
areas, and all of that same thing.
So let's talk about the politics now. I mean, the facts that I just discussed are absolutely clear. And it was true in places like Appleton and Nina and Green Bay and La Crosse and all over the country in similar blue-collar working-class towns. Youngstown, Ohio, for example, is a good example of that. Different places in Pennsylvania. These were all working-class towns, unionized.
Well, steel was king.
Class.
Right.
And with the decline, you know, with the decline, you had a growth in inequality. You also had a rise in blue-collar republicanism. And I think that, in part, that was because as the Republican Party was very sophisticated, and particularly Donald Trump was good at this, in speaking to the anger that people in those communities were feeling. They were misdirecting it. They were misdirecting it. In other words, when United States Steel shut down a plant in Youngstown, it wasn't black people, it wasn't immigrants who were responsible for that. But that's that. But people always, when they're angry, when they feel they're losing something, they look for a solution. And this was an easy solution. It's called scapegoating, and it's been effective. It's been effective in this country and many countries. In addition, and I think this is important, the Democratic Party didn't stand with unions and workers during that period. Rather, the Democratic Party adhered to what they call neoliberalism. Bill Clinton was the best example of it, focusing on reducing the deficit rather than helping to pass pro-union legislation. And as a result, a lot of people in those communities where they lost their jobs, they ended up working at minimum wage or in much, you know, losing a union job that in today's days might have paid $25 an hour and provided health care. They end up working at Walmart. Bill Clinton is the president. Bill Clinton is advocating NAFTA, saying it's going to be good for everybody. The Democrats passed NAFTA.
Bipartisan.
Yep. And as
agreement.
And as a result, people are like, the Democrats haven't been any good for us either. So they're very susceptible to the kind of scapegoating that particularly people like Donald Trump practiced. And as a result, you see that. Now, the other thing that's happened in the rural areas, is that without the unions, and I don't mean just rural areas, but in these blue-collar communities like Racine and Green Bay, without the unions that played another role, not only negotiating good wages, benefits, and working conditions, but they also provided political education to their members. And now these people are not getting political education there. And there's one other factor, and that is radio. Talk radio. There used to be a regulation on the books that equal time was required. They got rid of that in 1987. I believe it was 87 under Reagan. I forget. It was called
Fairness Doctrine.
Yeah, the Fairness Doctrine. They got rid of that. And as a result, you had the growth of talk radio, people like Rush Limbaugh and Mark Belling.
Right.
And that was taking place simultaneously as people were adrift without unions providing them with political education. And so their education was coming from talk radio and from right-wing Christian ministers. And as a result, they moved way to the right.
Dr. Rosen, hold that thought. Our phone lines are open as always at 844-967-2789. It's refreshing to have you here, Dr. Rosen, in the studio. We have so much in common, and especially what has happened to our country and the middle class. You chronicled what happened, and there are people who still don't know that. So I'm glad that we can have the discussion. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen. We'll be right back. You know, Dr.